Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
How's it, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Josh Lee Kwai. Yeah, I'm by myself today, although not for long. Jimmy is otherwise occupied. We've got a pretty interesting show for you today, something abnormal, not something we do a lot here at the Command Zone. We had the opportunity because the professor from Tulare Community College is in the LA area for some other reasons. And spoiler alert, it's not for extra turns or game nights, although we do hope to get him back on those shows again sometime soon, but it just timing-wise didn't work out this time. Anyway, he's around, and we figured, you know, it's a good opportunity to get him on our show. So the prof and I are going to have a discussion. We're calling it the evolution of magic content, but it's not going to be super structured, so who knows? We'll probably meander around some other subjects, but we're just going to talk a little bit about our experiences sort of coming up in the Magic content sphere, how it's changed, what it looks like now, that kind of stuff. Before we get into it, got to, as always, shout out our sponsors. Channelfirewall.com/command. That's the place you want to go to buy all your Magic products, singles, anything at all. You know you're going to buy Magic cards anyway. Channelfirewall.com/command is just the place you can go that you'll get your Magic cards, and you'll also be simultaneously supporting the content that you enjoy. And Kamigawa Neon Dynasty is right around the corner. The set looks really amazing. I love all the artwork on all the cards. The marketplace is really the best place to pre-order your sealed product. We've been talking about this a lot lately, but it just sort of occurred to me, and looking at the prices and things, it turns out to be true that the Channel Fireball marketplace has really good prices on sealed products because all of their vendors are LGSs, and so that tends to drive down the cost more because they're competing with each other. So if you want to get your hands on a bundle or a collector's booster from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, channelfireball.com/command is the place to go. And don't forget, if you forget to put in the affiliate link, you can also just put in code command at checkout, and that also counts. And then once you get those cards, you open up those collector's boosters. You get the nice shine. Oh, maybe you get the Neon Ink Hidetsugu card. You definitely want to put that into an Ultra Pro Eclipse sleeve. You probably want to make sure that you're playing whatever deck you're playing into an Ultra Pro Satin Tower or maybe a Mythic Collection deck box. Or you can find the deck boxes and sleeves that are themed around Neon Dynasty. They've got a lot of really cool stuff, playmats as well. Ultra Pro really does make the best stuff to protect all of your stuff. That's the company that Jimmy and I, we trust our own collections to. We say that every week, but we just want to make sure you can feel safe with your game pieces protected by Ultra Pro stuff. And then, of course, finally, the last way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/command zone. All kinds of cool perks for patrons, hanging out in our Discord. Jimmy and I are on there every single day. You also get to watch game nights and extra turns a day earlier than everybody else. Plus, we shout out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to Alex Kirchman. Alex, you rock. Was a little weird to do that by myself, I have to admit. But I'm not going to be by myself for long. Let's cut away now, and we will go to the previously recorded interview. I don't know if it's an interview. Discussion that I had with the professor from Tulare Community College. Hey, everybody. I am here with the professor from Tulare Community College. If you've been living under a rock and you don't know who the prof is, he runs the biggest Magic the Gathering YouTube channel,
depending on how you look at it. I think that's a really good question to start with in our discussion, because do we measure it by subscribers or do we measure it by monthly views? Do we measure it by top viewed videos? How do you measure the biggest? I have the most subscribers. 9 months out of 12 to 10 months out of 12, you have the most views. However, I'm very close behind those months, which makes me feel good. And there's 1 to 2.5 months per year, because I monitor every month, where it was a month where I guess like the game nights came late and it just didn't register all of them or something. But there's at least 2 months of the year where I narrowly get more views than you. And it's the greatest feeling in the world, because I know what an episode of Game Nights costs to produce. And I know what is it worth it to buy this video costs to produce. And it's just like, I'm holding my own. I'm holding my own against the juggernauts.
I guess I don't watch it that closely comparatively. I know what our numbers are. I'm not generally checking yours or anybody else's. So I wasn't aware of that. It does in some ways make sense in that we release about 9 to 10 episodes of Game Nights a year, so that there'll be a couple months that there's no episode, so that it looks different. I mean, I've just always in my mind thought of you as the biggest Magic the Gathering creator, just because you've been on top of that hill for so long. And listen, I'm flattered that you think we're in that conversation, but I think most people out there would at least be on board with the idea that you're the biggest. So we'll save the argument.
I actually think there's a lot of peril with being the biggest, and I'd be much happier being thought of as one of the biggest, but not quite as big as those big shots. Because whenever you're number one, they need to take you down a peg.
All right, so I'm here with the professor from Tulare Community College, one of the biggest Magic the Gathering content creation outlets that exist. You know, I'm a little nervous because usually we plan our podcast episodes like pretty meticulously, but we have the prof here for another reason. It's not Game Nights or Extra Turns. You'll learn about it eventually. He's only in town for a couple of days. And people are always telling me, like, this is a missed opportunity. You didn't get so-and-so while they were there to do this and that. And I thought, yes, you know what? Prof's here. It would be a missed opportunity if we didn't get you on the mic and do some podcasts. But we decided that our topic for today was going to be a little more loosey-goosey than normal, a little more of a discussion. We are going to talk about the evolution of Magic content and sort of our journeys through content and our views on like Magic content, and you know, maybe get into some of the controversial topics that people bring up in relation to each of us and our content. Sure. And you know, have a fun discussion here. But I wanted to say, I just want to lay the groundwork a little here, probably.
Okay.
Your first video dropped August 14th of 2013.
And my son was born July 28th of 2013.
So less than a month before that?
Yes. So I always know how old my son and my YouTube channel are simultaneously.
That's convenient.
Yeah.
That was just over 8 years ago. You're inching towards a decade of Magic content creation at this point. You did 12 videos, I noticed, from that date in August 14th through the end of the year. So you actually like started and started out by doing quite a bit of output in those.
It was completely unintentional. I had no intention or even thought to do more than the first episode, and it just kind of spluttered out. I got a lot to say.
Yeah, don't worry. Prof has done a lot of interviews, and I don't think it's super interesting for either of us to talk about like where we start, where did you learn how to play Magic or anything like that. But I did think it was interesting to say that like almost 10 years now.
Yeah, so yeah,
been in this game for a long time.
That's you too.
Yeah, we're a little behind you, and the Command Zone is a little harder to track just because we started out and we didn't put our videos on YouTube. We put it on Rocket Jump's channel. They were like hosting and our servers or whatever the data goes and everything, and our RSS feed. And then, so we started in like, I think it was June. I have it written down. It's July 14th of 2014. So that's like almost a year behind you. 8 months, 9 months behind you. And then 10 months behind you. And then on May 11th and 12th of 2015, we moved over to YouTube and we just uploaded like 45 episodes of our show that had come out like in the previous 9 months. That's why if you go to our early episodes on YouTube, they're kind of out of order if you sort by like date.
Interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't go like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It goes like 1, 3, 9, 11, 19, 21 because Jimmy just uploaded them all at once, the 45 episodes. But anyway, we're a little behind you. We're probably like 9 months.
But I think of us as, and we were talking about, one thing I want to say though is that, and in talking about content creation, I'm always very sensitive to, even when it's positive. I'm always very sensitive to talking about people who aren't in the room. And so I'm going to definitely focus on us. And that is not in any way excluding anyone new or old or anything like that. I just always feel a little like if they're not in the room, I don't like talking about their business and work. But suffice it to say, we were part of a group of people that all started within this kind of 1 year period. And not all the people in that group are still around. But I do think everybody in that group in their own way kind of changed the landscape, big and small, whereas before those of us that started in that 1 year period, YouTube magic content looked dramatically different than it does today. And I'm not saying that, you know, I mean, there's so many awesome content creators, but it's definitely an interesting thing that so many of us started in that period of us. Now we're old timers. Now we're getting out of the way for the youth.
Yeah.
But I remember,
getting out of the way. Wait,
I remember Command Zone before they had video. And one of the things I'm proudest of.
Before I had video of Jimmy and I, we always had video.
No. But they weren't on, it was just still images with a Ken Burns pull focus, right?
Yeah, we put the card images, but you couldn't see Jimmy or I.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you did a special episode. I remember what it was, your whatever anniversary, and it was you were on camera, and I called you up excitedly because I said, this was awesome. And you said, oh, it was such a pain in the butt. It was so much work. And I said, you have to do it from now on. And he didn't want to, but I'm so proud that I bullied them into being on camera.
You were right. You were right.
That's one of my biggest things is that I remember being on the phone yelling to you about, you got to stay on camera. And that is when Command Zone was just that was when Game Nights was just a figment of what if.
That was an idea.
We were doing Kitchen Table Fables next.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that was before Game Nights and everything.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the Kitchen Table Fable episodes,
there's three of them, and you should watch all three.
Yeah, they link to each other because some are on Prof's channel and some are on ours.
One's on mine, two's on you.
Yeah. I mean, those are like 2015 or early 2016,
they're
somewhere in there.
Funny.
Yeah.
They're funny.
They're short form. YouTube doesn't really incentivize that so much anymore. It's something we like doing. Okay, so I wanted to. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that magic content creation has changed, and generationally, I think of us as kind of the second generation of magic, you know, independent content creators and YouTubers. There was a generation sort of right before us.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are not around, as you said. And then there was us, and then there's kind of this new generation of maybe there's a couple generations in there, but there's this new round of people in the last few years. So much content creation has happened that, because when we were doing it early, there just weren't very many people doing it. Like, there just weren't the number of outlets, I guess, you know, the number of channels was
smaller. I think it was also that the direction. So, you know, deck techs were big, but like I remember a lot of people and their deck techs where they would show their deck. And I thought that was actually, that's something I tried to do early on. My early deck techs were me showing the cards I played. And it was important to me to say, I'm really playing with these cards and this really is my deck. And early on, a lot of people would, I remember, hold their deck up to the camera and go like this, removing each card and just being like, so I'm running four copies of this and only three of this. I think this is in my sideboard. We'll get to that at the bottom of the deck.
Yeah, and they're showing the actual physical cards in their hand. Yeah,
and I actually, that's something I liked, but it got to a point where I did a deck tech on every deck that I owned, and just building a deck for a deck tech and buying all the cards, especially since I was doing Modern in those days, was just not feasible. So I was like, all right, let's talk about this deck, but I don't own it. You know,
do you still have that same feeling, or have you evolved in that way? Will you do a deck tech for a deck that you don't own?
I don't do many deck techs anymore. That's the big thing that's changed, because deck techs had more value before. I guess we're going to name them EDH Rec and MTG Goldfish. They revolutionized the game as well. And I remember I did like a deck tech on, I think it was 8-Rack. And I still get people today come up to me and say, your 8-Rack video, it looked so interesting and exciting. So I built it. Hey, what are you laughing? You don't even know it's Modern. It's Modern.
I know what 8-Rack is, though.
8-Rack is awesome. 8-Rack is awesome. It's awesome. It's awesome. And you don't even play Modern, so what do you know? of 8-Rack, my sweet commander child. But they come up to me and they say that video. And the thing is that that was before MTG Goldfish and EDH Rec, where now when I do a deck, if it isn't from the newest set, people say everyone knows what goes in that deck. And I disagree with that philosophy.
Even if it is from the new set, a lot of times, if you're just a couple days behind,
And I don't mean that in any way. I really, this is why I feel like I don't want to talk about other people, because then people in comments are going to be like, oh, well, that's why EDH Rec is ruining Commander, or why MTG Goldfish ruined Modern. And it's like, come on, that isn't it. It's just they found a better way and a more efficient way to present a lot more information than me doing one deck tech that is unrefined and then having aggregate data and being able to show us some really good data and information. I love those sites, and I think they've made the game better. They've just made it different as well.
Yeah, so there's a couple of points there. I don't want
to... Yeah, I know. I meant not to talk about it. No, it's okay. Comments going to be yelling and opinion. Yeah, I think that Commander's been killed. Commander's dead because of EDH Rec.
I think we're in the information age, and if you're going to complain about information available to people, like, hey, good luck to you, but I'm sorry, but you belong in a different century. This is just where we are, right? Like, information gets disseminated very quickly now, and that is just part of the modern world. That has nothing to do with EDH. If EDH Rec didn't do it, there'd be another site that would do it. Like, somebody was going to do that. Every game, World of Warcraft on down, has like their key sites that collate all their data and give it to the players. And players want that, by and large, so that's why they exist. So I'm not going to entertain the people that say that, like, information is to blame here.
Also, everyone knows that EDH Rec didn't kill Commander. Game Knights killed Commander.
Right. Yes, of course. I wanted to rewind to something you said about deck text, though, because we started out, and our format for our podcast was we would do, like, a main topic, and then the second half of the show would be a deck tech for a deck that we were doing. And so we had 2-hour-long episodes, and, you know, we'd be like, first part of the episode is we're talking about politics and cool political things you can do. Second half of the episode is we're going to talk about Jimmy's Marchesa deck and do a full deck tech on that. And we rarely do deck techs at all anymore, even though our first, you know, 80 episodes, probably somewhere in the realm of like 60 or so, are some form of a deck tech. And what we found is that, and I think this is a piece of advice I would give to most Magic content creators, but definitely like Commander content creators, is deck techs are kind of a crutch, and I wouldn't do too many of them. Mm-hmm. They don't actually tend to be very broad in their audience appeal, because it's gotten to the point where there's so many decks that are possible to build, that a person is only clicking and watching a deck tech if they really want to build that deck, or maybe if they have a person in their playgroup that plays it, but that's still very rare. So what you're creating is a video that just a lot of people aren't very interested in, because any given Commander deck, you know, what percentage of players are going to want to build it? So that's a reason we've gone away from deck techs. Would you say that the audience, you know, retention or reaction or whatever is a reason that you've gone away from deck techs at all?
It definitely has, you know, an influence on it. But I also get surprised. I still do them. And what's funny is they surprise me. I'll do a deck tech on a really interesting commander. So, for example, I did a deck tech on, and this isn't me just plugging my video, which you should all go watch, but I did a
YouTube.com/
Larian Academy. It's the one time somebody, a car, drove down the street one time, and the horn honks, and the guy sticks his head out a window, and he goes, I love you. I love your YouTube channel, Talarian Academy. Talarian Academy, I love you. And he drives off, and I go, it's Talarian Community College.
I get that all the time. Like, people are like, are you Josh Lee Kwai from Commander Nights?
Yeah.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Thank you. I'm glad you watched.
And they don't realize that I'm from Friday Nights with Loading Ready Run. Yes, that's my channel. It's Loading Ready Run. Go subscribe. But
I was supposed to say, oh, you have a YouTube channel?
Right.
Okay, go.
No,
sorry,
that's
I missed
say
it.
To Pleasant Kenobi.
Yeah, my bad.
But the thing is I go out, and I think it's very important that I still just go into, you know, my local gamer store or game den, all that stuff. And I was playing, and I played against somebody who had a mono red control deck with Stark of Wrath as the commander. And I was blown away. And so the first thing I ask is, okay, so like, is this, how much of this is your design? How much of this is like, was this on a Game Nights? Was this from Saffron Olive? And we talk about that. And it was like, this was largely, he's like, I've been playing this deck for nearly 10 years, he told me. And I said, I'd love to play a game with it in our net, and he let me, and it was really hard for me to pilot, and it was such a clever deck. And I said, he was local, will you work with me in developing a script? I don't care if other people know versions of this, I'm just so interested and into this deck. And we did it, and the video has, you know, like 30,000 views. It's just meandering, and I'm like, there's no other decks like this.
Yeah, we should clarify, that's for prof, that number is, it didn't do
I consider
very good.
That didn't, you know, below my average.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I go and it's like, oh, it's Modern Horizons and there's Urza and everybody has done an Urza deck tech and everybody has done the deck tech a certain way. And I just felt I did it. And it's like, this is nothing that, not to be self, you know, disparaging, but it's like, everybody did an Urza deck tech. I'm sure you guys did an Urza deck tech. Nope. Okay, well,
wait. We previewed the card, yeah. But we didn't do it full deck.
All right, no need for the flex. but, and that one is huge numbers, and there was no, like, gimmick to it or anything special to it, and I thought it was just like, I loved Urza as a character, so I wanted to do it, and as I built a little Urza deck, and I played it, and I was like, I'm going to do this, and it wasn't anything. It was very similar to how a lot of people play Urza. And that one's got above average views by a significant amount and is still getting views to this day, even though the card is still old. And everybody under the sun has talked about Urza as commander. And then it's like there is zero Stark of Wrath deck techs out there. And it's a great deck and it's this person's specific build. And no one, they're like, yeah, give us Urza. And so I can't figure it out. And I really just think
that deck techs in general are just not high appeal.
Sure.
You might strike it lucky, hit gold once in a while, and that's mostly a timing thing. Mm-hmm. If you get lucky with timing of when you put it out and you kind of beat everybody in market or something like that. But in general, I see a lot of content creators and the bulk of their output is deck techs of some kind. And, you know, I think mixing in more videos where you're talking about like overall strategy or something that's generally relatable to most players will be more successful or have more audience that want to tune into that than just doing deck tech week by week. I do understand, though, the allure of doing deck techs because they're generally not difficult content to make, right? Like, there is harder content and there is easier content. And just, like, listing off what cards go in something is a lot easier than sort of trying to wrangle a topic that's something like politics in EDH, right? Like, that is, you have to, like, organize your thoughts and figure out a way to get from A to B, and that's just a lot harder to do.
Right.
So, I understand that. Okay, I've got a list of like little questions that everybody in our staff kind of put down as interesting things for us to talk about.
Sure.
So as, you know, we reach points in the conversation where maybe there's a little bit of a pause or we've kind of feel like we got to the end of talking about that, I'm just going to throw these in no particular order because, again, we did this kind of last minute. So how do you think your approach, well, this is a good one segueing from the deck tech stuff. Six of your first 12 videos were product review videos. Three were just crack-a-packs. You just opened a pack. One was a $30 Goblin Modern deck. One was called Advice for Returning Players.
That one I was really proud of.
And then you had a which booster pack has the best value video between, which you still remember all these?
Even I remember every one of them. That $30 Goblins deck was also one where I would bring modern decks to modern events at my local game store. We couldn't get six people playing modern, and there were about four or five of us showing up, and so I'd make extra modern decks and I would offer them to people, and I didn't want to give out a very expensive deck, so I made this $30 modern Goblins deck, and it did great. I mean, and you can still put a budget mono red Goblins deck together in modern and play with it today, even in this Ragavan economy.
I was gonna say, you have to rip a Ragavan into thirds to get $30 out of it. Yeah, it's crazy. So my question is, because I don't feel like your channel, the last 12 videos, would look anything like that.
No.
So your content has clearly like evolved in the way that you do your content and how you think about it. So how would you say your approach to, you know, Magic content creation for your channel has changed over the years?
The biggest way that it's changed. So first of all, it does mean a lot to me, and I really do try and stay honest to myself. And I've had plenty of videos, usually when I'm being an MTG boomer and complain about the digital client. And everyone's just like, it sounds like Prof just wishes people were just playing in paper in 1996. Like that he just won't be happy until it's 1996 and he's just playing on the pavement with his revised cards or whatever.
Are
and
they
it's
wrong?
Like, they're not wrong. They could just say it nicer. But, you know, but I am going to stay true to myself. And if I'm like, hey, look, I am going to just complain about Arena's economy or whatever because I don't like it, and other people can talk about, like, and yeah, I do think the free-to-play aspect is a benefit and such, but I'm going to always be honest to myself. And if I'm ever not honest to myself, I can't do this. I can't look myself in the mirror sort of thing. But the big thing that changed was right around the time that we had the cardboard quality crisis.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to make a video on it simply because, and I talk about this, I won't go into the whole thing, but I felt everyone knew about it and I had missed the boat and I was a little embarrassed that I had not realized it as soon as Reddit and other big things had, other people had made videos on it. And I just felt like, you know what? Everyone knows this. I don't need to. I'm not shining a light on anything anyone doesn't know about. And literally, people on Reddit, of all places, were making threads that were at the top of the subreddit saying, Professor, please address the cardboard issue. And I made a post. I'm like, why? It's the top of Reddit. And what finally got explained to me, and it really resonated, there were some people who were mean, but some people who really did actually talk to me. And one person in particular said, look, everyone knows about this, but when it comes from someone with a reach like yours, it isn't that you're informing us anymore, but you're validating the issue. And you're saying, yes, this does exist. The quality is having an issue. And you also do a good job of explaining what is going wrong and why it is a problem. And so you take a collective, like everyone on social media and Twitter and at the local game store, I do a lot of eavesdropping at the local game store, and things like that. And you kind of congeal it into this one thesis or narrative that then is easy to digest and many people feel is representative of us, and we feel represented. And I go, and they go, it literally says on your bio, I review cardboard and cardboard accessories. How can you not talk about the low cardboard quality? And I said, you're right. And so I made my video on it. I made several follow-ups to it. And then other issues since then that have come up that I feel like everybody knows that the reserve list is there's no reason to keep the reserve list. Everybody knows that the list is not a good way to get reprints to people and not a good way to justify a higher cost of set booster prices. But I made the video to voice it. And another thing, it's not only negative, everybody loves the idea of remastered sets as both a draft and reprint experience. You get your reprints, you get to draft a set that the boxes are thousands each and don't even exist anymore. How am I going to draft Time Spiral? Well, Time Spiral remastered, if only it were made in a larger quantity and available, but the idea of a remastered set is great and we want it. And so I did a love letter to the remastered sets, this whole video where I was just hearts everywhere. And people were like, yeah, it's putting a voice to that. And I feel again, and that comes back to being honest though, but I do feel this kind of, I don't want to say responsibility, but like this, I feel a weight of that. I feel the weight of the community, and I do listen to that. It does weigh heavy upon me, and I treat it with seriousness, even if it's not always apparent in videos. It's apparent in my process.
Interesting. So you would say you've changed by, like, what how would you, like,
caring more about what people think of me? No, that sounds wrong. No. I've changed in that I felt early on that, like, okay, the $30 Modern Goblins deck. I felt people didn't realize you could build a modern deck for $30. That's C+.
Oh, so you thought early on maybe my job is to show people things they wouldn't already know. And now,
People don't realize, you don't realize that there's this Italian binder that has a four-column row so you can show off a playset of cards. And they were the first and only one. That was another one of my proudest moments, is I imported it from Italy. Long conversation with my wife. The channel was not making any money at that point, and it was about $200 to get this imported from Italy. And I was like, here it is. Look at how beautiful playsets are. Now, every company took that idea. They wrote me. They're like, thank you for asking to go ahead in the video. And I jokingly said, hey, why don't you just do this so that people can get it? And they did. And the company's like, we love that you loved the binder. Thank you for telling one of the biggest companies to just do what we thought up. And they said it playfully. I was like, well, you know, there you go. They're out of business now, and hum-hum-hum-hum still is in business. And so there you go. Go watch the video and find out. But like, that idea, that moment where everyone was like, it was like the Stark of Wrath mono red control. I was like, you've never seen this. I want to show it to you. And I'm not interested in saying what everyone else is saying. I'm not interested in doing what everyone else is doing, but I've changed in that I've recognized there are some things that everyone else is doing that I do need to do because it's expected. And that maybe even translates to Urza, because they're like, we just want to see you talk about Urza. And I'm like, well, it's kind of what all these other creators said about Urza. They're like, yeah, we want to hear you talk about it too. We watched theirs. Let's hear it. And it's like, all right. Here it is. The cardboard quality is, you know, it's gotten better.
It's really, I mean, as an aside, I feel a deep sadness that the cardboard quality was so bad during Commander Legends specifically.
Oh, that because the inking and the print. I did the print quality, especially if you bought, ironically, the worst quality was in the most expensive sets.
Yeah.
Now, how do you feel about the fact that he just said that, but everybody says you're not allowed to say that because Wizards will sponsor game nights and that you're not allowed to ever say anything negative? They mentioned bad cardboard quality before I did, and yet they are, how do you feel that people say he won't mention that Commander Legends had bad print quality and he just brought it up of his own accord? How does that make you feel?
I don't know. I mean, obviously you don't like it when people accuse you of, what's the word, like self-censure because of some, I think this happens to you a lot. It happens to all content creators and it's always frustrating when, I don't mind it if a person like doesn't like the content or doesn't like what we're doing so much as when they ascribe some sort of motivation to me that feels dishonest, because that's not fair, right? Like, I'm like you. We're making content for the reasons that we want to make content. I used to work at Disney Universal on huge movies. Like, I could choose to just sell out and not, right? I had that choice. And this was a choice that was made because we love this game and, you know, Game Nights is a love letter to the format that we love. And so it feels bad when somebody basically accuses you of being dishonest. That part I don't like.
Yeah.
But I guess to answer your question of like, we've definitely been critical of Wizards. I think, you know, I'm often jealous of the way you've set up your content and your channel. I've told you this all the time. You know, and I don't know how pre-planned it was or whatever, but you've got a nice rhythm to the way that you can kind of do any kind of video that comes in your mind. And if you want to turn on the camera and talk to your audience for 15 minutes about something, you can do it. And that's just not really, like, can you imagine the Command Zone coming out with an episode that's just about how bad the cardboard quality is? That's not what our content is about. Our content is about Commander, playing the game Commander, giving you strategy for Commander. So that we can kind of, like, you said,
why can't you just turn on the camera and talk for, like, well, I mean, that's what we're doing here for an hour, but, like, not about the cardboard. You don't do reviews and criticism too much. There's a moment.
We just don't do videos that are that. We might have that within our videos.
But you do, within your more discussion, but do you feel it's impossible for you to do one where you're going to flip on the camera and just like be like, all right, I want to talk about this thing that just happened here. No outline sort of thing. I just want to talk about this. It's 15 minutes. We had X, Y, and Z came up and these are my thoughts on that. Or this product came out and or like this. And I just want to say it's a shame about the inking quality in Commander Legends. Or is that what would happen if you, why don't you feel you have the access to do that?
Well, I definitely, we could do it, right? Like, we could do it. That's just not what our channel is. Like, you were a critical review channel from the beginning.
Right.
We're entertainers, and we're about the strategy of the game. Like, we like to talk about Commander, the format, the best moves to make, the best cards to put in, why you think about what cards you play in what order, and those kind of things. And in general, we don't like to get bogged down into the other parts of the game, which I'm not saying...
But you do. You just do it in a different context.
Right.
Because one of my favorite moments is you very passionately and almost angrily complaining about the fact they don't stick a fetch land in each Commander precon. And I believe it wasn't Jimmy, it was DJ as the co-host. And DJ was like, well, I kind of give the mana base on these like a C plus this year. And you go, no, it's a fail, like this. And you really look, you're not like joking, you go, no, it's a fail. And he's like, why is it a fail? It's got A, B, and C. He goes, just put a fetch land in there. There's nothing keeping them from putting a fetch land in there, or at least the battle bond lands. Like, at least that, but they won't do either. And so as far as I'm concerned, that's a fail. And so that's, and I was like, I was sitting there watching that just as viewer go, yeah, JLK. But like, I don't think that those moments resonate for some reason.
Because we don't title the video.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think.
Maybe.
I think for us, like we just did a video, which is Dear Commander Design Team, which I think is the closest we've ever gotten to that type of a video.
Right.
But we need an hour's worth of discussion to feel like I can title the video that, and the video is about that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're talking about other things, and we're going to talk about card quality. We're going to say, like, we review, like, was this a success or a failure for the player base, for the commander stuff. Like, we have we just don't have as many chances to do it. I just don't feel like it's our job or our place or the channel that I want to be where I flip on the camera, talk to the audience, and just give my opinion on, you know, those ancillary things. Because mostly I want to talk about the game, the gameplay, that side of things. But I like you sticking up for us that we do throw in our criticisms to Magic. We've been complaining about white, you know, being not powerful enough for a long time. You know, we do definitely throw tons of stuff. So, we've said this many times on the show before, but I'll say it here for clarity. Game Nights, the show, is sponsored by Wizards. It's sponsored by Wizards because the cost of creating game nights is very, very high, and there's really no way to do it unless we have quite a bit of sponsorship money.
You should see how expensive that show is. They have 20 employees, and they pay them very well. That isn't just like employee, like, oh, I'll give you a couple hundred bucks to do this for an hour. They are full time. They are in the office. They're working every day. This is what their 20 employees pay their rent with and stuff. They're paying them more than a living wage. They pay. Josh is a big believer. He beat that into me in like year two or three. He's like, you always pay people the best. And I've tried to live up to that thing from him with the few people that I hire and work with. And I try that. So I've seen the bottom line, and it would blow your mind what it costs because of all of this to make what is, quite frankly, the highest quality, best, you know, gameplay footage in the game, in multiple games. There isn't better Pokemon quality than game nights. And I've told them to do Pokemon episodes, but well, that's another thing. Yeah. That's another thing.
Yeah, the way I boil it down, I mean, I appreciate that part. Yes. Thank you for sticking for us, as always. The way I always boil it down to people that blows their minds is that if for every minute in the finished episode of game nights, it is between 12 and 15 hours of labor.
Right.
For every minute. So a 60-minute episode is about 900 hours of total labor from the various different, there's, you know, multiple editors, multiple VFX people, the talent on the day, the crew, everything like that. So it's a lot to do game nights. So game nights, sponsored by Wizards, kind of has to be sponsored by a large entity to even make it possible. But the rest of our content is not. And I know people go, well, yeah, because they're sponsoring that thing, though, you have to be nice to them all the time on your other stuff. You can't just haul off. And but the fact
that they don't. That's not true. This guy, if you say to him, you have to do this, he'll be like, no, F off. You know, can I say F off?
Sure.
You want, okay. He'll, the first F off in 10 years, you know, that's probably the first time, man. I didn't even say it all the way, but he really is like that. He will not take crap from anybody, including Wizards of the Coast. This is the reason why you don't complain about cardboard quality or fetch lands in game nights. That's not the venue. That isn't the venue. It's like people are coming here to sit down and watch an entertainment, a television level quality show. It isn't where you get up on your soapbox. The episode that comes out 2 days later where he's in here telling DJ, no, it's a fail, is the one where they get to say that. It isn't because of anything other than that's not the show. The show is, we're going to have fun. And it's okay for people to be like, I want an hour of fun right now. And you can save the complaints for the podcast. This is me getting to push Josh a little bit as I'm like, I'm saying, I'm going to throw you questions. All right. You may ask me another question. Try and hardball me. Come
well,
on.
This is an interesting one. Something we talk about a lot in the audience. How do you feel about competition between content creators? You know, you and I have always had a good relationship, but that's not always the case. And I know there are various reasons, but I think, you know, sometimes content creators can feel like they're up against each other. We've never had that philosophy with each other, but in general, how do you feel about that?
I almost can't handle it because one of the things that happens is this idea, this mentality that's wrong, both in viewers and in other creators of you can't watch Tulare Community College and The Command Zone, or it's one or the other. You can't have both. And it's like, yes, you can. This, it's not like primetime TV where only one show is on at 7 p.m. Wednesday nights, and then there's no way to watch the other one like 30 years ago when we were kids, right, or 40 years ago when you were a kid. And he's older than me. He's older than me.
Always got to bring it up. Okay.
Professor. But yeah, there's no, that's the level of competition. Is good-natured grief between friends. But it breaks my heart. And what also bothers me in a deep way, and I don't mean bothers, like I can't handle it, is I hear people say, like, oh, well, Tulare or whoever would never retweet X because X is going to just, is doing a deck box review or is doing gameplay or something. And it's like, no, you know, that isn't true. And I've worked really hard to bring in smaller creators since year one and two, where I literally was like, I want to bring on people, bring on guests. I'm really proud of the fact that there's a lot of people who are really celebrated in the community that the first place you might have heard or seen them is on Tulare Community College. But at the same time, there's a lot of awesome people, and this list is huge, people whose content I love, people who I love, that I've spotlighted, that I've spent entire episodes telling people to go subscribe to, and they just never caught. And so for every time you go, oh, well, you did this video year three on you know, Rhystic Studies and how awesome he was, and such, he is awesome. And it's like, yeah, but I also did a video on this person, and you're still not subscribed to One More Mana. And I did three videos on them, and I'm having them on guests again. And I'm trying to, and nobody, I'm retweeting them everywhere, and they're not catching. And I think they're amazing and awesome, and there's a million other people, but it doesn't come down to that. And no one retweeted me, and no one had me on as a guest when I was, before I had 100,000 subscribers. Except Josh, maybe, but you
know, we did, but we were little then. I don't know if you were helping us or vice versa.
Right, but I don't think it was. I think it. I'm not saying it doesn't mean anything, but this idea of competition, and there's this cutthroat, like late night talk show hosts at like Leno versus Letterman and right. such, or if you're young, I guess Fallon versus Kimmel.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. I'm not so old.
Kimmel? Is that the name of a person? Yes, it is.
He's got a thing. But yeah, and I really, and it breaks my heart too, because I do believe in community in this, but then it gets to a point where sometimes then it turns really kind of, and again, I am sensitive, right. but like I start hearing like he there was this period where people were saying like he won't stick up for small YouTubers. I'm like, I do nothing but that. I don't understand where that's, and it's just like, oh, well, you didn't retweet me maybe, or something like that. Or you didn't retweet my favorite person. It's like, I can't do that. I can't turn my thing into every day I'm retweeting six people.
I think it's hard also for people to understand just the raw amount, Twitter specifically, but just the raw amount when you get to a certain size of stuff that's coming at you.
Yeah.
Well, I remember, you know, when we first started out and, you know, Jimmy had 100,000 Twitter followers. When we started out, I had 20, you know? So for me, it was really exciting early. I was like small and people were coming and talking to me. And when I was around 2,000, 4,000, 8,000 Twitter followers, it was fun. I was on Twitter a lot because I could keep up with it. I could talk to everybody that was trying to talk to me and I could respond directly. And I was having these great conversations. Then you get a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And what ends up happening is so much is coming. You realize like, oh, it was now a full-time job to keep up with this if I wanted to continue to respond at the level that I used to, right? And then once you get even past that, you're like, I don't even see a lot of the stuff coming at me because there's just so much. And so,
how many emails do you get per day?
Oh, yeah, you know, 300.
Yeah, for every person that I did spotlight that did, you know, go on to do big, great things, there's people who are amazing creators that I really loved and really tried to get the word out about and maybe didn't always, some of them, or maybe didn't catch that as much as they would have liked or this. And they're still out there and you should go check them out. And I'm all for that. But it isn't a competition. I don't succeed based on their failure. If
much the opposite, actually.
If One More Mana takes off, we both succeed more. They're doing Commander content in a fun way that will, when people are done with their episode, they'll go watch an episode of Josh's show. He wants them to succeed. I want them to succeed.
I think, you know, people don't realize that enough. Every channel out there that's on YouTube or Twitch or anything that is creating new fans of Magic
is great.
Is good for the two of us, because every single person that's created that, you know, that didn't like Magic yesterday and likes it today is a potential viewer for all of our stuff. So everybody out there that's doing stuff, I want them to succeed because that stuff is actually making potential viewers for me. And I'm hopefully making potential viewers for everybody else as well. And I think that is the, what is the saying that rises all ships?
Rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah, and I know it's a saying and people just throw it out there, but I mean, if you think about it, it truly does make logical sense because we're nowhere near saturation in the world. It's not like a billion people play Magic. So there's all these people that don't play it. And and by far, our biggest potential audience is not the 30 million people that currently play. It's the 7 billion people that do not. Yeah, exactly.
If somebody, the more anybody, big and small, the more anybody gets people thinking of YouTube as where you go for Magic content, the more that benefits us. And even if it's just 30 more people that they're getting excited about it, that means that they will, when they're done consuming that, they might say, well, what's next? Well, you don't have, we'll go watch another program. And it's not a competition. And if somebody comes out and does a product review that is a different style, and there was somebody, I won't name the name, and they're a friend of mine, but they were doing product reviews in a different criteria. criteria. And somebody was like, oh, he's using different criteria than the prof. And I was like, that's great, because maybe you disagree with my evaluation methods, or you agree, but it gives you a different thing to think about. This is benefiting everyone. And I'm all for it. There's more than one way to enjoy content. And if you, it's everybody wins.
Well, and who's not going to, if another person came along and did product reviews, who's not going to watch both?
Yeah.
Right. And they're just now in a better position to make a better informed decision based on the fact that they now have two perspectives that they can listen to. And also, that it didn't cost you anything, because they're going to watch yours, and the other person's video might cause them to go back and watch yours to say, like, oh yeah, what did the professor say about this?
Right.
Just to get that secondhand view. So again, that person's actually good for you. We like to say in the Command Zone, and it's a little highfalutin, and there's, but I'd like to say that our competition is HBO and the Avengers and, you know, 90 Day Fiance, or, you know, it's stuff that, because that's all stuff people could be consuming instead of watching our stuff. Our competition is not the other Magic the Gathering content creators. You know, that's what I like to look at. I like to look at the really big stuff and be like, okay, let's imagine we are in competition with them. Now, what do we have to do? You know, how does that make us produce our content in the best possible way? And I think that's just a healthier way to go, rather than just sort of be spiteful and look around at other people that, you know, if I looked at Prof's videos and was like, he's doing a deck tech for a deck that we were going to do, and then now we're just, I, you know, I'm mad at him about it or whatever.
Yeah, that was, there was a year where we both did a certain video that had a very similar title, and yours came out, I was literally editing, I remember it very clearly, because I was like, for a minute, I was like, not at you, but just that it happened. I was literally editing it, and my notification and your title was almost identical to the one I was working on. And I'm editing it, and I'm like, the thing that annoyed me was that people are going to say, oh, even though like it takes me weeks to make and edit a video, and they're going to say, oh, you just copied them when yours comes out in 2 days. And I was like, ah, to heck with it. And then the same thing happened to me this year, where a video of mine that had a similar theme to Dev came out within each other, and people were like, oh, are you guys like? Someone was even like, are you fighting with Dev, who you love and have spotlighted, and go subscribe to Strictly Better MTG? No, we're going to get into the thing where I just say every YouTube channel name, and they're all great people, but it's like, no, I'm not fighting with them. We just thought of a similar idea at the same time of year, and it's like, go listen to him, listen to me, and tell you had a good time.
And probably,
you had a good time.
Probably anybody interested in that topic did listen to both, and it didn't hurt either of you, and it's not like you were competing with each other, but
No, the real you want to know who my real competition is. It's that damn limited resources podcast with Marshall Sutcliffe, and they've just
they're always stealing my topics
on draft.
Yeah,
everybody is going away from Tularean Community College for limited resources podcasts.
They've only been around forever.
Yeah,
we love Marshall, and
we love Marshall. He was a big inspiration to me making a channel.
I would say he's one of those. He's probably the OG godfather of Magic content, as far as like he was just doing it before, way before anybody else was really even involved. So yeah, Marshall's been around forever. All right.
I love how we start, and I even before
you're
we
like,
filmed,
we're
I said Josh.
Names.
Well, I even said to him before we filmed, I said, "Hey, Josh, I don't like talking about other people when they're not there, even if it's positive." And I'm just rambling off names left and
right. It's impossible to talk about content creation and not do it.
I really do. That the other reason why it hurts when I hear people talk about like the competition and creators, or even another creator feeling like other creators that might be larger have some vested interest in keeping them down, is I really do love this community, and it breaks my effing heart so much.
Can't have him not say it. Yeah,
yeah. It just really does, because I really love these people, and I really love, I think we do beautiful stuff on here.
Yeah.
I think we all bring something special to the table, even if the topic or deck tech is similar. Like, you know, sure, but you know, devil wrap it out. Like,
all right, we got a whole bunch more stuff to talk about. We're not done yet, but we're gonna take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that, and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
All right, we are back. I'm here with the professor, one of the biggest Magic the Gathering content creators in the business. I have to say, I'm liking this conversation, Prof. It's free-flowing. I like to be organized generally. I know you...
That's what I said in the cutaway.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm stealing his line.
Stealing my stuff.
You know it makes me a little nervous when it's not planned, right? Like, this
yeah,
is just,
I know.
You know.
That's what I said. Literally, I say to him in the cutaway, I know it makes you nervous when it's not planned, but I'm really enjoying the free-form, and then we come back...
Stole his video idea. all right, let's move on to another topic here that the staff has sort of thrown at us.
Okay.
What's a comment you hear frequently about yourself... that people have wrong?
That I'm only these days it's that I'm only negative. And it wasn't that long ago where people said I'm only sucking up to Wizards of the Coast. They said,
what's that like?
People would make, there were even, I gotta stay off Reddit maybe, I'm realizing, but like there were Reddit threads where people were sincerely talking about that Wizards had approval over my videos, which is absurd because that was still like year five and people were saying that. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And now they're saying the opposite. Like someone just the other day made a, I think it was a tweet, and they're like, someone was like retweeting me and someone replies to their friend, but then I see it and they go, no thanks, I could do without the endless negativity. And I'm like, the last three videos of mine were me gushing positive about a product, about a thing to happen in Magic, and just about the community. So yes, the fourth video, four back, was one where I said this product is a C+, I think. And then, but it's like, I went back at one point and added up 2 years worth of videos. And honestly, when doing so into like negative, positive, and a few other little things, it skewed a little more one way or the other depending on your window.
But it was probably 50-50. Within the margin
of
really
error, 50-50.
Right?
Yeah. It's like, he likes this, he doesn't like this. And I'm just being honest about it. And it's like, yeah, I am a bit of a crank. I am the old man who yells at the cloud. And whenever you post on a video, look at this episode of Dice to Removal, old man yells at cloud. It's like, have you not seen me? If you don't enjoy a cantankerous guy just coming in and being like, yeah, you know, like, well, I like Time Spiral Remastered, but I don't like the list, you know, like if you can't have a laugh at that, then go watch somebody else. There's a lot of other cool people. But I really don't like that because I'm not setting out to do anything other than be true to how I feel. I have many opinions, all of them strong. And I will voice those.
But all of them your own. And I think this kind of harkens back to that thing I mentioned earlier, which is like when the criticism is leveled at your motivations, right? When they were like, oh, you're only saying positive stuff because of XYZ. That's what hurts, right? Like if they're like, oh, you're positive all the time, it's not quite as bad. It's like, well,
when they said WotC approved, had to approve my videos. When I did the cardboard criticism one person literally said, it's part of WotC's plan. They gave him the go ahead to say how the cardboard is bad because they're going to fix it. And this will make it look like to their advantage that I complained in a way that caused change at Wizards of the Coast, who I can't get a sample product from to review.
That is a heck of a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, and it's just like
do you live in the real world, people?
It's like, come on.
I mean, I'll be the first one to say that this guy will never ever say anything for any reason other than like that's what he thinks. Like he literally, even if his life was on the line, he probably wouldn't be able to do it.
Maybe for my life.
Maybe. I'm not sure if you would. You'd probably be like, the cardboard is... I'm sorry, I can't see it. The cardboard's...
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
Sorry. But it's this, there goes Prof.
I don't know. So that's it. What about you? What if I turn the question to you?
I think... You know, it's interesting. I don't know if this is the biggest thing people have wrong about me, but it came to mind when you were talking about how you went through your videos and you kind of tallied which is negative, which is positive, and it came out. People often... listen, I know I'm the bad guy on game nights. You know, we've kind of positioned the stories that way for years now because it's more engaging when there is sort of a guy to root against. So I know people root against me, but it still kind of gets at me when like people are like, oh, Josh always wins and it's all set up for so that Josh wins or that the games are scripted on game nights. I know you have strong feelings about the scripted thing. We'll let you do that in a second. But the funny thing is like, just from a data standpoint, like in the last year in 2021, I won one episode of game nights.
Yeah.
We played 9 games. I should technically win like 2 of those games.
Right.
You know, the previous year I won 1 game, I believe. So it's, I'm actually not winning, like, and people, just like people always say to Jimmy, and I know this gets at him after a while, that he's always mana screwed. Whereas Jimmy has only been mana screwed in like, yeah, I know. Yeah, it's a fun joke and a fun meme to make, and I get it. But those are the things that kind of start to irk you after a while, where people are like, Josh always wins. It's like, listen, we're playing Commander and I should win sometimes, right? Like, I get to win sometimes.
If Game Nights was scripted, how come I've never once won an episode or of Extra Turns? Like, you won't even let me win an Extra Turns. You won't even like say, all right, on this episode, let's let Prof win Extra Turns. Like, come on. Yeah, I recently did get a little frustrated at the internet saying that Game Nights of all things is scripted. And I was like, I have been on there. So my first episode of Game Nights was literally in Jimmy's apartment.
Yep.
And I've been on Game Nights since then.
Every single
and
year.
Extra Turns and this and such. And it's not scripted. And I bring my decks and they're my decks. You can tell because I lose. And it's my deck. And I'm always just trying to impress this guy. And that's the same thing where when we do the talking, what do you call it? Talking heads or whatever. Is like, I'm always just trying to impress this guy. It's improv. And Josh directs improv with like asking questions. Like, how'd you feel with this or this? But then it's up to us to say it. And he might say, give me another, you know, like tell me another thing. So we have some choices. And anytime I say something where Josh goes like on the first one, it's like, that's great. I get like this feeling and like with some of them I was joking around and he goes, that's the one, and I'm like, that, and he's like, I loved that, and it's like, yeah, I'm impressing daddy, you know. and I'm getting praise there, and I, it's all about that, and that's what it is. There's no, nothing is scripted. It just isn't in any way, shape or form. And it's just it's a program. It's got great, it's scripted in the sense that he says, make the card jump up out of the thing. And then they spend $8 million to make the card jump out of the thing with a team of 20 people downstairs. But that's post game. That's after the game. Make the card jump up and do something. All right.
Yeah. I think people,
yes, boss.
A little aside, I guess, about the scripted thing. When we say it's not scripted, we mean the game plays out the whole game. People just play the game. And yes, we sort of say, okay, can you just do whatever you're going to do? We're not changing your plays, but can you just put the card in this spot when you play it for the VFX?
Yeah.
We don't tell you like, well, you should probably play this card instead of that card or make this decision or whatever.
I wish they would.
Yeah. So the game plays out and the game, you know, ends and whoever was going to win wins and there's no scripting of the game or anything. And then we go and we do the interview part of it. And that's where the improv you're talking about happens, where we say, okay, and we have somebody that's written down every move that happened in the game. And I'll say, okay, Prof, on turn 3, you know, you played this card. You know,
why'd you do that?
Yeah. What were you thinking in that moment? Were you going to attack with it? You know, what other? Yeah.
Why?
Prof? There was this other stuff going on in the board. Was that a worry to you? You know, what was going on in your mind? And he'll answer the question honestly about what he's thinking. And then a lot of times, because a person will say, I don't know, because you don't really, you're trying to recreate it, right?
Yeah.
So they'll be like, I think I was doing this and I wanted to do that and blah, blah, blah. And then a lot of times I'll go, oh, that second thing is interesting.
Yeah. Can you tell me more about that?
Said,
or tell me that.
Let's concentrate on that part of it just because I wouldn't have thought of that. That's interesting. So I go, let's drill down on that. And the person will go, okay. And then they'll just restate kind of. And so.
Well, but also here's a really good example. So maybe Josh says to me, hey, Prof, turn 4, you did this. Why'd you do that? I might go, I don't know. I think my goal was with that. I was trying to make it so that I could respond to Jimmy, who was ramping, but it ended up like I really should have done a different play. And Josh will say something like, all right, you want to tell me that again? And now I've thought it out. And I go, I don't know what I was thinking. Jimmy's ramping up over here. I'm freaking out. And then I play this. I really should have done a different play. And so but that all came from me. It's just a matter of the first time I'm like literally having a lot of ums in there. And he's like, say it again without the ums. Say it with a little confidence because you just thought of it. That's what a good director does. But that ain't a script, ladies and gentlemen and everyone in betwixt. That ain't a script. That's called quality improv. Can you imagine anyone feeding me lines and the way in which I deliver it? Can you imagine Josh writing for me and I'd be like, yeah, so true. I played my dockside extortionist at the right time. And it, like, and I was hella going into, I was.
That's I was, how you think I talk?
Okay, here's Josh Lee Quai. It's like, you know, it's the juice worth the squeeze.
Yeah.
It's the juice worth the squeeze. How's it?
Yeah.
I mean, how's it?
It is improv. So sometimes a little bit will come up where somebody, we would come up with a thing and you're like, wait, I'll say this, you say that, and then I'll respond and that'll be a joke. But that was in the moment
like
in improv.
A skit too. Yeah. Like that's not even in the game. That's just like in a thing where like there was one where I actually said to him, I said, I had my Felden from just casual gameplay and we were doing the pre-cons and I said, hey, it'd be really funny if I take out my Felden and then you say to me, prof, we're doing pre-cons. And then I say, can I pick first? And you go, yeah, okay. And it's like, that was my idea, ladies and gentlemen. I thought it up and Josh said, that's cool. And we did it. So when he says off camera, prof, we're doing pre-cons. And that's like, I get, that's not a script, but it was in the moment improv. There's a huge difference.
Yeah, it was just
a huge difference.
We just workshopped the beat in the moment. Yeah,
it's a bit. It's called a bit. Ask your parents.
It's called a bit. All right, switching gears totally to another, because we're not doing segues or thinking.
I want to ask you a question.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yep.
This is the one I asked you. It's on the list, but I thought it up.
Yep.
What do you think is your best piece of content that has the lowest views, and I know what it is? Or what do you think is your best piece of content that did the worst? What's your favorite piece that did not perform as well as you want? And I think I know which one it
I'm
is.
I'm worried now because I have to ask you this question afterwards, and I didn't.
You don't know you don't watch my content.
No, I watch a ton of it. Okay. Well, how will I know? You're just going to say, yeah, that's the one.
Do you really think I'd lie? We just established. I don't do that.
It is the World War One recap that I did. It's called Lessons from the Great War, I believe.
Oh, where, that was a good one.
Where I basically
that was really
basically did a lot of research onto because I'm a big history fan about like the start of World War One, and I drew all these parallels to a game of Commander and all the lessons you could learn. That it was like reverse game theory. You know how they use game theory to like inform advisors on how like nations should like behave and stuff like that. And I was like, let's do that in reverse. How nations actually behaved, can that inform like how I should act in the game? And that was, and no one watched it.
No, that's not the one I thought.
Oh,
I thought it was one where you had, I believe it
the
was
painter.
Yeah, that's the one,
Rob. That's my second.
Yeah and I remember too that, and I guess I was cheating in a sense because I knew that before it came out Josh was literally texting me like, I really love what we did, it's so exciting. We literally have, it was
Rob Pryor, who's a world-renowned artist. He's had,
had a piece, and he's like here. He's like, he's literally painting fantasy art as we talk, and we see the whole process, and he's like my brain is electrified by what we got to do. And it was like a deadline in view, so it was like, beep.
You know what, there's no magic cards in that episode, so nobody cared.
And so that was one where you really cared about what you did, and it just was like, beep.
I think, you know, a lot of content creators, and we're going to get to yours in a second, and we'll see if this holds true. The piece of content that you're most excited about is often something that's outside of your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you do a ton of, you know, five best cards from Modern from this set, or, you know, whatever it is, you know, deck techs, or, you know, even Office Hours, you've done so many of those now that any single one of those, while you're probably excited about it, is not going to be the most excited. So it's usually a thing that is outside of our norm,
mm-hmm.
that we're excited about, and that mm-hmm. tends to not do well because it's outside of our norm.
Yeah.
So our audience is like,
yeah,
that's not what I'm here for, and they tend, so you, that tends to be, so let's see what your, the video that you were the most excited or most disappointed by, how it performed.
It was Office Hours.
dang it.
It was, it was Office Hours to Ferry. I thought it was my best video ever, and it was also like particularly it did okay.
This is fairly recent.
It was,
yeah.
And the thing was that the actor playing Teferi has a very personal connection to the character, and he has a somewhat personal connection to me, and it was a very transcendent, we had been in pandemic, and I was like, oh, we can't do it, and we were just getting to a safe way to do it, and he happened to live within a reasonable distance, and I hired three cameramen for that one. I hired Spice 8 Rack to write the script because I thought, we're doing magic comedy and academic comedy, who better? And I loved it, and I fell in love with it.
And we had the effects and everything.
And that was the thing. I got my love, Dormonster, and I got Dormonster to do the effects, and it was great, silly effects. It was everything I was about. It was literally, it felt like, to me, and Teferi is also a character that, when I was in high school, was one of my favorite characters. And it went out there, and it's not number 9 out of 10 in performance. And like the top 10 best modern cards from whatever the recent standard set was, was doing number 2 out of 10. And it's like the video cost for me, I know this is like what lunch costs for you, but like it was like, I'm not going to say the number, but it was several thousand plus. Right, I pay right. my writers, I pay my editors, I pay my cameramen, I pay my effects people, I certainly pay my cosplayers, everybody, because somebody taught me to do
that. That's how you do it. Yeah.
And it was like, this was expensive video. And it wasn't just that it was expensive, but I believed in it so badly. I watched it. We had all these effects and it did okay. It did average. Like, it still doesn't even have 100,000 views. Daily views on it are like 10, whereas like videos from 4 years ago on some silly thing are getting 400 views every 2 days. And it just, it makes me sad because it's the type of content I love the most. It was funny. It was laughing. I was making academic jokes. I was making Magic the Gathering jokes. It's like anytime like you have Teferi, it's like, I'm going to protect you. And then you're like, wait a minute, that's maybe not a good idea. Teferi's protection. You're going to phase out and never phase back in. And it's like, I love that type of humor. And forget if I'm allowed to say his name now. He loves Teferi so much. He was like, I only want to be known as Teferi. And
let's
so
not
I won't,
say it just
I won't
to be safe.
It just to be safe. But he's a great guy. I love him. And I'm trying to convince him to come on as himself to just do something else. I love him. He's a professional actor. He had all of his stuff done with professional industry people, which is why everyone's like, wow, you're staff and you're this. And he's an actual thespian. He's done some major in his real life performances. He's great. I love him. And the episode just did 9 out of 10. Okay.
Well, you know, there's two things I wanted to mention. One is, you mentioned, you know, it hasn't even done 100,000 views, which I think, you know, a lot of content creators out there would be like,
oh, sure, I know. I don't mean
No, and I want to address those people and just be like, context is everything, right? Yeah. So for Prof, like, you know, it's just all about what you've sort of been doing recently. He's not looking down his nose at anybody.
No. I'm looking down my nose at myself.
But it's all about trends, right? So when you say 9 out of 10, YouTube sort of has this, you know, this list of your last 10 videos and it says whatever video you just came out with, it kind of puts it, you know, oh, of your last 10 videos in the same amount of time, this one is the 9th out of 10 or whatever, which is, you know, sometimes it's great when it's, you know, 1 through 3, but it's not, you know, often you don't feel great about it. You know, Prof, one of the things I admire about you and I think makes your content like one of the reasons why your content's so good, but also is like a heavy burden to carry, is that to this day, 8+ years into it, and this video is what, 6 months ago, maybe? Like,
no, a year. It's a year old at this point, I believe. Yeah.
Well, that's how old I am. That feels recent to me. I remember watching it because you were, you know, you showed me some of the VFX at that time. Yeah. Well, still in recent times for you, you still are like that invested in a singular video that you put out, and you put out 3 videos a week. So I've always thought that is one of your greatest strengths, is your ability to sort of continue to be that passionate about every single video that comes up.
I love what I do so much that I'm afraid of what will happen when I retire at 70 or something. Like, I'm not joking. I get out of bed in the morning and I'm like, I want to get into the office and I'm there late and I love this. This is a lifelong dream. I was a kid and dreamed of this. I made movies on my camcorder. I did that. I published a magazine about Nintendo games where I wanted people to read my magazine. I would make bulletin board posts on the Loading Ready Run forums reviewing episodes of Friday Nights and giving them letter grades before I had a channel. My whole life was dreaming of this, and it's a dream come true. And every minute of it is a roller coaster that I don't know I don't want to get off of. And I love it. And I don't know what I say this, but I don't know what I did to deserve that, but I will work so hard to earn it and deserve it. I will get there. And I've got another project in the works.
Oh.
Yes. Josh Lee Kwai, what is your biggest mistake you've ever made?
Okay, good segue.
What is your biggest mistake?
Just in life?
No, in your channel. Mean there's more to life than your channel? What? People ask me, what do you do when you're not playing Magic? I say, I don't.
The biggest mistake I've ever made...
For the Command Zone. What's the biggest mistake you made as for Command Zone?
Well...
I know what I'd say.
You know what you'd say?
Yeah.
If you were me?
Yeah, no, if I were me looking at you, if I were judging you and saying this, if I were to say, my friend and fellow content creator, JLK, this was Command Zone's biggest mistake in their channel's history. I know what I'd say, but I'm curious what you'd say.
I haven't really thought of it in these terms before. That's not really how I look at it. What do you mean it's on the page? The question's on the page or my answer?
No, not your answer. The question's on the page.
Yeah. I just copied and pasted that. So I didn't see that in there.
You paid someone to write it for him.
No, I just was like, hey, what good questions do y'all have? Let's put them down. And then, you know, I don't want to prep. I mean, I think, I don't know if this is the biggest mistake we ever made, but very early on, we got off to a pretty fast start, and then Jimmy and I decided to do two episodes in a row. It was probably like our first 15 episodes, maybe like our third and fourth episode, where we decided to do like a set review of Conspiracy as like a draft format. Because we loved Limited Resources at the time, and they weren't talking about it, and we thought Conspiracy was amazing, and that so everyone thought we were a Commander channel, and then we just started talking about drafts for like two episodes, and yeah. Then we lost a bunch of... It was amazing. We like first couple episodes, like a lot of views for starting out, because Jimmy already had it was like 20,000 downloads on whatever, like first two episodes. Then boom, Conspiracy 2 down to like 8,000 to 10,000 downloads, and it took us a year maybe to climb all the way back to where we had started the first two episodes. So I always have like been like, what were we thinking? We started a Commander show, and then you know, we just switched it over to a draft limited show for like a few episodes, which, you know, wasn't the best
thing.
Can't
compete with Limited Resources. They're stealing all my subscribers.
They're stealing all my ideas and my topics.
We're losing subscribers. Limited Resources. We got a new set review coming out.
But people were like, I thought this was a Commander show. Yeah. Like, I'm not watching anymore. And we were like,
but isn't one of your biggest regrets that you are, do you feel pigeonholed by Commander? Don't you wish you could talk about limited or 1 week, like a new player format or like, shouldn't that be what you're doing more of? You're regretting that you didn't stay in your lane?
No. I just mean that early on, I don't think it was smart to do that. Yeah. I don't regret that we chose Commander and that we chose a niche and that we really like stayed in that lane for this long. I think, you know, that's the type of content we wanted to make. I am jealous of you. I say this all the time about your ability to kind of jump around, talk about different things. Because, of course, Jimmy and I, we play a little bit of Arena. We still draft and stuff. We are involved in other aspects of Magic. And we don't have a good way to bring that up because what we learned is nobody cares. You know, if we're trying to talk about other things that we can throw it in here and there. But I think that I don't see as a mistake so much. We just found out, you know, where we needed to be. And, you know, just because you see somebody else doing something you wish you could do doesn't mean you have regrets about the path that you chose. What did you think I was going to answer as my biggest mistake?
Oh, I didn't know what you were going to answer. I know what I'd answer as in what I think your biggest mistake was.
Oh, I'm interested
to
hear.
It was recently. It was within the last year. You said I could talk about it. Now, I want to clear with you the thing with the mom. I believe how you hand, like, I believe part of that, one element, I think you did everything right, and then you missed the landing.
Okay, hit me.
So, you did a sponsored ad for a, I don't know if you want to say what it is, but you did a sponsored ad that you received a lot of criticism for. You were affected, you didn't necessarily agree with the criticism, however, you listened to it, and you said that what people felt the sponsored ad was for, you said what they think it is, I'm against. I don't think this is that, but I am definitely against what they think it is. And I'm going to listen. And you actually, and no, you didn't tell anyone. That's what I think your mistake was. You did what it was a beautiful thing. They did an ad, which they got 20 employees. They got huge bills. And despite that, and despite the fact he disagreed and said, I don't think that this is what people think it is. When he listened to his viewers and subscribers, and he said to me, and I was shocked, he says to me yesterday at lunch, he said, well, we'll never do another thing for them because I won't support that thing that I don't think they are, but I won't be seen. I don't think that thing is okay, and I won't be involved in that, and I won't do that, and that's not right, and I'm going to listen to what people are telling me. And I'm like, that's beautiful. Did you tell people? He's like, no, he didn't tell anybody. And I think that was a mistake. I think you should have, I think that's where you should have flipped on the camera and said, hey, everybody, listen, recently we did a thing for this service, or maybe a service you've heard about that we, for legal reasons, can't name, but nonetheless, I don't know what the legal things on that, but nonetheless is we do not support X. We do not think the service is X, and I still don't, but people are telling us they think it's X, overwhelmingly so that I'm going to go and say, I'm going to listen, and I definitely don't support X. We vet, and I know you do, every single thing that's on here, it's things we use, it's things we support, it's things we test out, and we felt this. I've even used a similar thing in the past. I had a personal connection to this service, but nonetheless, people said it's X, and I think X is unacceptable. I don't think it's X, but since X is unacceptable, and so many people are telling me X is unacceptable, we will not be doing another sponsored thing from that out of respect for the fact that X is not okay and out of respect for our viewers. And you didn't say that, but you did everything. You did everything right, and there's egg on your face in the community where people are like, oh, they did it. They still see people making jokes, and it's like they did everything right. They listened to criticism. Even when they disagreed, they said, we trust in our viewers, and we don't think that what they don't think is right, so we will not do it. But then they just said, well, don't talk about it. Don't say we're never going to do it. And I think that was a mistake. I think you should have said, hey, we're not going to do it. And maybe done a little reach around. You can do a little reach around every now and then as a treat. You can do a little like that.
Okay, let's not call it that. But yeah. Pat on the back is what he means. I'll be a little bit clear because I know you're dancing around. And I appreciate that. We had a sort of financial sponsor that was a loan company, and they were offering a lower interest rate. And I've, as a person who like had bad credit in my late 20s, was done with money when in my early 20s, as a lot of people are, and just found myself in a pretty bad spot. And it sucks to like have bad credit. Anybody out there who has it knows, like, you can't buy a car. If you get into a sticky situation where you need money for like an emergency or something, it can be hard to get a hold of the money. So I know like bad credit really sucks. And this service was actually a legitimate way to take your bad debt and get a lower interest rate on it. Basically, take all your bad debt, put it into this, and they'll give you a better interest rate, and they'll look at some things that other companies don't look at, like, do you have a job? Do you have a history of receiving paychecks orderly at times and things like that? And what people saw was, when they heard that, was they thought it was a payday loan.
Yeah.
And payday loans are a separate category of thing, which I'm totally against, and I think
are horrible.
Yeah, super predatory, and nobody should do payday loans, and payday loans are really bad, the worst, and they're part of the problem of how you get into this cycle of debt that you can never get out of, and I'm totally aware of that. And so the thing we were sponsoring was definitely not that. We had vetted it. We would never recommend anything like that, but it didn't matter. Every time we would run an ad for it, people would say, like, how dare you peddle a payday loan, even though that's in our views not at all what it was. And you know, to be even more transparent, we had vetted this service and made a deal with them for a long-term deal for, you know, I think it was a full year. And we were, you know, maybe a month and a half into however long we were into it. We had a lot of runway in front of us and, you know, a significant amount of money promised on their part for the sponsorship and the promotion. And we had to, you know, say, I'm sorry, we can't endorse it. We're getting too much blowback from our community. You know, and we had to just walk away from the deal that we had signed, cost us some penalties and things like that. And, I guess we never spoke about it. Maybe that was a mistake.
Because I think that's the right thing to do, is to listen to your community.
Right.
And that is them listening to their community. That isn't like you weren't losing subscribers over it, right, or like views over it, but you were hearing from the people who support you in just like being there and like who you have a relationship with as creator, viewer, and you listened. I thought that he has to. You sign a year contract. You've got 20 employees. You have to do that. And he says to me, we'll not do it. People told us it was toxic. You did the right thing. And then you got blamed for doing the wrong thing. So I think that's a mistake. And that's your first one in 8.5 years.
I'm sure there have been many
mistakes. That and the fact that you've never complained about the cardboard quality or why we don't get Fetchland reprints.
Well, let me ask you, Prof, the same question, because I'm curious.
I already answered it. The cardboard, the fact I didn't do that. That's why I have a video called The Biggest Regrets as a YouTuber. And it is. That's my number one regret, is that I didn't speak up on the cardboard because I was embarrassed that I missed it. I remember seeing the cards on the dresser curled and thinking, that's weird. And then going, oh, well. And I was so embarrassed as the guy who's supposed to be the cardboard reviewer of the product. And I just was like, everyone knows about this. Everyone's done a video and a podcast and a blog about it. And I'm just like, I'm not going to do this. And then I dug my heels in and people were like, you need to do this. I'm like, no, I said I wouldn't. And then I just finally was like, all right, let's do it. And I will stay on top of it. And I'd like to think I talked about Commander Legends and, I'm clutching my knuckles. That's my biggest mistake. That's where I failed, was I didn't speak up on it when I was called. Like, it's one thing to miss it. I missed it. I'm not angry that I missed it. I'm angry that when someone said, hey, here it is, and I go, oh, shoot, it is in poor quality. I should have had a video up the next day or the next week after some testing. But like I was like, well, I missed the boat. And that is the regret. Not that I missed it, but that I said, oh, I missed the boat. Well, I won't do it. And I won't let that happen again if I can help it. That's my biggest one.
Okay. All right, let's look at what another question they've got down here. I think we got time for a couple more.
You're not going to cut that thing about the sponsor, are you? Are you going to cut it? I think he's going to cut it. Let's see if
we're
going to
leave
it.
We're not going to cut it. Right. I don't think we're going to cut anything except maybe a couple of the more questionable word choices.
Yeah.
We'll just
what?
Beep it.
Effing?
We've beefed a couple times.
But I didn't say effing you can say on The Simpsons.
It's true. We're not. Yeah, okay.
The beep is worse. Well, the beep is worse. People will think I said the word. People will think I said the word. I did.
Now I'm libeling you if I beep
them.
It.
Yeah. If he beeps them, I said EFFING.
This is an interesting question. What's your favorite pieces of content that are not made by you or us? Like, don't blow smoke.
Yeah.
Content on YouTube, let's keep it to, online content. Because, you know, I know you like Doctor Who and things like that. But
I like criticism a lot as a critic. And even though I don't watch movies, film criticism, both positive and negative. So obviously, number one, it's like why 90% of people watch YouTube these days is Red Letter Media.
Yep.
I love Red Letter Media. I've watched every episode of Red Letter Media 500 times, and I've never seen Star Wars, but I can tell you what's wrong with it thanks to Mr. Plinkett. I can. And I also love, on the positive end, Movies with Mikey. If you've never seen Movies with Mikey, he only does, like, it's Film Joy. He's renamed the channel. Not so recently. I'm old. It was years ago now he renamed it Film Joy. But it's beautiful, beautiful celebration of film. And those are two ends of the spectrum. And I like a lot of the critics in between, which is weird because I don't really like movies and TV that much. But I love hearing the dissection and stuff of it.
It's very surprising, basically. Yeah. On, you know, what you have
something about the critique because it's honest in both cases. In Red Letter Media and Movies with Mikey, they're both saying how they feel, and I really, and they're saying it, they're articulating it well. They're not just saying this sucks, he's saying here's why and here's what they should have done instead, or this is beautiful and here's why. He's not just saying it's great and if you disagree you're wrong. He dives into the filmmaking process and why it's great, and I love that. But that's me. And obviously also, like, if we're doing the span of non-magic, well, I mean, Loading Ready Run does magic, and I love I only have a channel because of Loading Ready Run. They inspired me. I would have never had a channel if it wasn't for Loading Ready Run. Limited Resources, Marshall's life story was a big inspiration. The Vlog Brothers were a big inspiration, but the biggest one was I was addicted to the old Loading Ready Run skits. Pre-magic, when they started doing magic is when I freaked out. I was a fan of theirs before they did Friday Nights.
They played magic?
Yeah, I love their stuff. They need to re-upload more of their old skits that people haven't seen from The Escapist onto their YouTube channel. And then Dormonster, especially old Dormonster skits. And to get to work with Dormonster on effects, and I got to guest star on one, and I wrote the one that I guest starred on. Oh, no, I wrote the one that they guest starred on me, and it was me imitating them. I'd watched, you know, a decade or so of Dormonster, and I was like, this is me writing a Dormonster skit about magic. And I think I caught their voice very well. But what about magic? Like, what about in magic? Do you watch a lot of magic content? Who's your favorite magic content creators? Excluding me and sure. Excluding... Yeah.
Just excluding you?
I guess. Are there others?
No, I'm just...
And limited resources. I don't know.
Yeah.
And Loading Ready Run and One More Mana. And
yeah, right. I'll apologize before I answer to everybody out there because I do watch a lot of magic content or consume a lot. I like to just kind of know what's out there and what's going on. But I'm not like religiously listening to very much stuff like all the time, like the same thing. I'm just like, I dance around and what are they doing now? Oh, what are they doing now? And, you know, I might miss a few videos or episodes here and there of everybody, but I try and get around out there. So the one I'm going to say, though, that I've always had a good admiration for is Sam from Rhystic Studies. I think Sam is just doing something that's kind of unlike what basically anybody else is doing. And you know when you see a video of any kind or a movie or anything and you're like, I wish I could do that?
Yeah.
Sam kind of gives me that feeling. Have you ever watched, there's a show on HBO now, it's called How To with John Wilson. I think you would like it.
No, but Vince...
You don't watch a lot of TV, yeah.
No, but Vince recently got me into Auntie Donna, so I mean...
But anyway, that's the type of thing where like this is a person and they're not... They don't have any resources that you or I don't have. All he has is like a camera and good writing, right?
Is it a comedy or a real thing?
It's a comedy, but it's kind of like a documentary style. He's genuine, so I wouldn't say mockumentary, but it's... Anyway, it's hard to explain, but Sam sort of reminds me of that in that, like, Sam doesn't have any resources that I do not have. If anything, right. It's the other way around. But he always does things that I'm like, man, that is so good. And all you need is Sam's particular voice and talent to do it, which I do not have, so I can't necessarily do that.
He has a PhD in Italian. Do you have that?
Sure, but I mean, that's his videos are not in Italian, so I feel like
one of them was
probably. So anyway, that's a person whose content He's I think amazing. Is really good. Yeah, yeah.
I remember Sam since before he was even called Ristic Studies, when his channel was Magic called Man Magic Sam. Man Sam.
Yep.
And he did this. I hope I'm not annoying him by saying this, but he did a skit. Saga that was like X number parts, like 10 part series, where it was him battling the Dark Confidant from the card Dark Confidant over a box of the original Modern Masters, which at the time he had stolen from him. And he was devastated, and he went to social media about trying to fundraise because he needed the box for the skit, because he opened a pack in each episode, and he was able to get a replacement box, and he did all this grateful stuff and everything, and it had really cool special effects, but he took it down because it's not indicative of his work, and Sam is a little high-minded about that auteur. Sam right. is someone who doesn't say author, he says auteur.
Auteur.
Auteur. or whatever that is in Italian.
We say that in the most loving way.
Yes, I love Sam. I'm trying to get
whatever
him out for
the
a visit.
Particulars are. That
have you ever
make
had
Sam? Sam
has Sam ever been on a game nights?
Not a game nights, but he's been on the podcast.
But so. Has he been on an extra turns?
I don't think so. I mean,
why don't you
no.
like Sam? Why do you keep him off?
I mean,
your
we've
show?
Been in the pandemic.
You keep
for...
him off your show.
Here we go. I'm going to get all these comments of, would you ever consider having Sam from Ristic?
Right.
Yes, we definitely will have him on sometime. Okay, we're getting pretty long in the tooth here, so we're going to wrap up. I want to ask one more question, though, because I think it's probably the one that the most people watching this up till now are expecting us to ask, which is, and you've gotten asked this a million times, so if you can come up with something new, that'd be great.
No one cares.
Content creators out there, there's a ton of them. They look up to people like you because you're one of the biggest in the business.
Yeah, but they don't want the advice. They don't want it.
We've talked about this before.
They don't want to hear it. They want to hear...
Is that your advice to them?
Yeah, that is. My advice is listen. And I know you've said that to me too. The number of times somebody asks me a question and then doesn't want to hear the answer, what they want to hear is come on game nights or come on to Larian Community College and that'll make you famous. It won't. Or just what little secret can... You know, like there isn't a secret. The secret is you got to listen. Josh and Jimmy have done multiple episodes telling you how they make the show, what advice they'd give to people. There was one where I think you were even looking, I think in some ways, at it was right when, was it, it might have been Commander's Quarters or somebody was coming on the scene and you were doing a really intelligent analysis of what he's doing right and this and that and the other. And there it is. I've done it. I've talked about it. We've all done it. But what I find is people don't listen. And I don't mean it like they don't. I call it Guitar Hero mentality. You want to be a rock star without learning how to play an instrument. That's Guitar Hero. Stop trying to be a guitar hero. You need to dedicate yourself to wanting to make the content better with no hope of viewership or reward. And all of that you have to block out. And it has to be about a passion for the act of that creation and wanting to see how you're doing wrong and how you can do better and not telling, boy, the number of times I meet someone who all they want to do is tell me about how great their content is. And when they asked me, they started by asking me about advice and they go, well, let me tell you about my podcast. And it's just like, oh my God, are you going on and on about how great you are? What do you need me for? Then you don't want to hear what I want to say. You want me to hear how great you are. And I feel people don't listen. I feel that's one of the best things is listen. I listen to even today. We're going out to dinner tonight and I can't wait. I know what we're talking about too. And it has nothing to do with a collab. And I just want to hear what he thinks about X that we're talking about in terms of content creation. And I just want to hear it. I want to listen to you. I wish I had more people that felt that way in general. And I know he wants to listen to me.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the people probably don't know this, but Prof and I'd say probably 4 or 5 times a year, we have sort of a mastermind conversation where we compare notes, you know, what are you doing? What are you seeing out there? What are the philosophies between the moves that you're making? You know, what's changed? What's new? What's different? What do you think about this? Here's a situation I was in. How would you handle it? You know, we pick each other's brains. I go out of my way to find people that I can have that conversation with. You know, Freddie, Jimmy's brother's been in the YouTube space forever. He's a guy whose brain I try and pick as much as possible. So I'm always looking for Donald Miner, one of the guy that created EA Shrek, one of the smartest people I've talked to. He's another guy. And I have you know, I'm looking for people that I think are smarter than me or know things that I don't know so that I can ask them questions, put scenarios in front of them, find out how they would react.
Almost once a day, either Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, or me are DMing probably. Each other. We DMing on little and small. Little. What do you think? But it's never us saying to the other. I get a DM from Seth or he gets one from me and it always starts with what? As in, what do you think of this? What do you make of this? What do you think of this? And we haven't even done that much crossover, me and Seth, in terms of on-screen stuff. I was on a thing, I think I had, he guessed it on a, he did a couple cameo bits, but we haven't done like a big epic crossover. I do have something planned, but we always, it's what do you think of this? What do you think of this? What do you think of this? And I really, and he's in a very different realm of creation than me. And I really like what do you see there, Seth? What do you see there? And he asks the same of me and we listen.
Yeah. Cause smart people seek out other smart people so that they can make them smarter. Right. Yeah. And I think the number of content creators that have ever approached me for just to like, hey, can I get advice or pick your brain about a thing? I can count on one hand. Like it's like you said, nobody actually wants to hear that. Do they want to come on our content?
Yeah.
And they think that our influence is somehow going to, you know, catapult them into some sort of stardom. And the reality of the situation is that how good your content is what's going to have the biggest influence on how, you know, popular and how well it does. And anything we can do to spotlight you is only going to be a slight accelerator to what that is. And like you said, a lot of times you highlight a thing and it doesn't catch fire. And that doesn't,
yeah.
Because our influence is not as great as you think it is.
No.
You think that like we're going to mention a card and everybody's going to buy it. You know when everybody's going to buy a card we mention? When the card is good.
Right. That's a great way of putting it. That's why when I do my jank lists, everyone's like, my 19 cent rares are going to suddenly be $10. No, they're not, because it's not a $10 card.
Yeah.
It's a cool 19 cent piece of jank for people who like to play janky decks like I do. And maybe it'll go from 19 cents to 50 cents. And one time in a blue moon, the only card I ever spiked was Wanderwine Prophets, and it was a guest on the channel highlighting it, Laboratory Maniacs CEDH content. I don't even get the credit for spiking it because they technically did the deck tech on it and such. And
it's the virtue of the card more than the person spotlighting it. Did they put a spotlight on a thing? Yes. But if the card is not good, it won't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's the virtue of the card that's really carrying most of the weight there. So anyway, I would say to content creators out there, that's my piece of advice, which I think is kind of what you were saying. Seek out your peers. Seek out those other people that you look up to. Seek them out and ask for their advice, really pick their brain about what, you know, you can be doing, and then listen to their advice.
Yeah.
Because
know that they don't have the key to making you, you know, big, nor anyone. And another thing, like a really great example of that is, you think David Chang was like, if only the bigwigs would notice my restaurant, that'll make Momofuku really
popular. Yeah, he went out and he said, how can I make some food items that the customers will go nuts over?
Right.
And if I do that, nobody will be able to stop me.
I just read his autobiography and he was like, I'm not giving reservations to critics. If they want it, they can wait in line like anyone else. Where as opposed to every other restaurant, they would be like, let the critic come in. If we get a write-up in the New York Times, that's positive. That's our success. He's like, no, make the food better than any other food. Make your content better than any other content.
Yeah.
Put us out of business already, because we're all in competition with each other, especially you, Marshall.
All right, Prof. This has been really, really fun. I hope everybody out there enjoyed it. Free-flowing conversation, but Prof, it's always great to talk to you. In fact, we've just talked for almost an hour, for about an hour and a half
now.
Don't
cut any of it out.
And I'm actually excited for our dinner tonight, where we're going to continue to talk probably for another couple of hours. You're just that kind of guy. I love you, man.
I love you.
Okay. And we love all of you out there. Thanks for watching. I'll probably do a little wrap-up aside from this, but I won't make you sit through that. All right, thanks for tuning in to a really fun discussion with the professor from Tolarian Community College. I want to make sure to shout out our sponsors, channelfireball.com/command. That's the place you want to go to pick up all of your magic products, singles. Kamigawa Neon Dynasty is right on the horizon. You want to pre-order that stuff. You want to get your collector's boosters, your draft boosters, whatever it is. And we get all the cool cards from that set. channelfireball.com/command is the best place to go to get it, or you can use the code command at checkout. Don't forget. And also make sure to protect all of your game pieces with Ultra Pro products. They really are the best in the biz at protecting all of your game pieces. Plus, they make really cool stuff that can kind of adorn your gamer cave or whatever, your game room. They make wall scrolls. They have all the beautiful artwork. They splurge for the IP so that they can have the magic themed artwork on most of their products, and that stuff looks really sharp. And also uses the same technology as like the Eclipse sleeves and everything else. So even those printed sleeves really are really sturdy and will last a long, long time. So can't recommend Ultra Pro enough. On this episode, because I'm by myself, I think we're going to skip the end step today. It's just not that cool to talk about something cool outside of the outside of the world of magic by yourself. But we'll be back on end steps here soon enough. But I do have to thank our team, which is Arthur Meadowcroft, Shauna Gillis, Damon Lenz, Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Sam Waldo, Gaurav Galati, Truck Ty, Jamie Block, Evan Limburger, and Mitch Trafford. And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the living card animations that begin our show and often sit behind us here on set. He did do this steam vent. So you can find Jeffrey on Twitter at livingcardsmtg. Okay, I'm gonna go now because it's hard to do this stuff by myself. I miss Jimmy. Hopefully he'll be back soon. All right, peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.